This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Celtic Exchange, a fresh insight on Celtic Football Club.
This is episode 73 of the Celtic Exchange Weekly. This is Tino, and this week I'm joined by Miff and James as Celtic once again take their place at the top of the Scottish Premiership table, following an opening day win against Aberdeen. Miff, a spectacular debut stint by yourself as host last week. How did you enjoy that, first of all, and how did you enjoy the Aberdeen game?
Hello, Tino. Hello, James. Hello, listeners and watchers. How did I enjoy it? I think I endured it rather than enjoyed it, but I done it. Happy to play my part.
Team player.
But absolutely delighted to see you back fit and healthy, mate.
Delighted to be here. What about the game? How did you enjoy that?
I enjoyed it. Enjoyed the atmosphere, first and foremost. Enjoyed taking the boys to that. You know, always great to bask one more time in the achievements of the previous season. I thought the fans more than did their part. I mean, big nod to the North Curve for their efforts. Absolutely outstanding. You know, they can often be much maligned, but I think you really, really have to take your hat off to just the sheer amount of organisation. I think it's fair to say nobody does it better. Really, really, really good stuff. So happy just to be part of that. In terms of the game and the actual, you know, the game on the park, job done. We have probably a wee bit of work to do. There were just wee elements, I thought, just patches of the game were maybe a wee bit flat for me. Some individual performances, which I was surprised at given what I'd seen in pre-season. But over the piece, the first thing I did when I'm home, it's not like me. I watched the highlights. Geez, we were dominant that first 25 minutes. I think you're always that wee bit nervy at the games. Maybe sometimes time plays tricks in your mind. Then when you go back and watch it again, just to see how dominant we were. But overall, as I say, job done. But there was wee elements, obviously. But it's first game of the season. Yeah. Maybe being a bit harsh.
That's okay. I think that's fair. And we'll get into it in a bit more detail in a second. James, competitive football's back. Full Celtic Park. Couple of goals, clean sheet, 3 points. Good to be back.
Atmosphere side of things was great to start with. They were doing a bit of a fan celebration stuff before the game. I was talking to one of the stewards. Some folk turn up at like 9, 10 o'clock. So a real, you know, full day at it kind of thing. Not quite for me, but they all enjoyed that. The display was phenomenal. The funny thing about displays is you don't know what they're like until you go home. You know, you're just standing holding a bib. Hope this is good. It was excellent, you know, the whole thing. And it worked well with what Celtic were doing on the official stuff. So great work from everybody involved in that, both Celtic and the North Curve guys. Really enjoyed it. I know what you're saying, Miff, about, you know, work to do and stuff like that. And I can agree with that. You know, a team who'd been trying to attack more, we maybe got something from that game against us. You know, if they'd managed to nick one, you know, Livy style and then blanket defence it kind of thing, you know. But I thought the actual football was excellent throughout. It was just final execution that was lacking a wee bit. And I think that'll come, you know, in fact, I think that'll be getting booted into the day.
One of the lads in the chat said, try to score a perfect goal. I'd say that pretty much summed up. There was just that extra pass run about the 18-yarder at times. But like I say, that was my, and I'm just being honest here because I know people sometimes don't like any sort of negativity, and I'm not being negative. Just that was my first reaction at the game, my gut feeling at the game. Part of that probably just nerves, but then when I got home and I watched the game again, probably just settled in a bit and said, no, actually. Sometimes it can be a different experience sitting there on the day and getting all caught up and then going back and watching it a bit more calculated. So maybe there's a bit of that in it.
Yeah. Tell you what, we'll get to it all in a second. So I'll just set the agenda for this week. So this week we will cover a very enjoyable flag day at Celtic Park as Captain Callum McGregor raised the league flag in front of a full stadium and a spectacular TIFO display as well. We'll also take a closer look at the 2-0 win itself and of the contribution of a few of the key players on the day. So that'll include Jota, Stephen Welsh and midfield by buzzing to know Greg Taylor, who was excellent on the day. Celtic have also confirmed that Ian Bankier will step down as chairman on the 1st of January next year, and a return for ex-CEO Peter Lawwell is the talk of the steamit. So we'll provide reaction to that. And finally, we'll look ahead to the trip to Dingwall to face Ross County next week, as well as covering some things like stadium banners, new third kits and all else in between.
Just to say it was a Pistol Pete reference as opposed to shooting.
So it was on the radio, aye.
I got it, Miff, but yep, I understand yep. it. That some might not have.
Thank you.
So let's look at Flag Day itself. So as I say, before we get into the finer detail of the 2-0 win via Aberdeen, there was impressive scenes at Celtic Park as Callum McGregor walked out with the Scottish Premiership trophy before raising the league flag in front of an energetic home crowd. Miff, the background to all of this was that spectacular stadium-wide TIFO display, organised, as you say, by the Green Brigade and North Curve guys, with the help of donations by the wider Celtic support. And it was really impressive to see, wasn't it?
It wasn't half, and I think that's what where we've kind of stood out the past few years, is we know how to celebrate these occasions when they come around. Could argue with a lot of practice at it, but we certainly do it well, and it just set the scene for the day. You know, it's not lost on any of us, I don't think, the amount of organising that goes into that. And you're also setting yourself up for a mighty fall if it goes wrong, as we've seen from some other displays, one I think that involved Alvin Stardust. But the key thing is pulling it off, getting it right, and you need everybody in early to be able to do it. And our bus left Lanarkshire at 3 o'clock, was in for just about 25 past three, and the bus park was already half full round by the Emirates by that time, which I wasn't expecting that to be the case. So it shows that everybody was in. The Celtic was absolutely heaving. So the fans have obviously played their part, have got themselves in early. Like you said, James, you know, some people made a day of it. You know, brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. James, as Miff said, we've had a bit of practice over the years, you know, some big European nights, some big displays and different things. But is there anyone that does this quite like Celtic? They really, you know, more often than not, get it absolutely spot on. And I'm saying Celtic, I mean, you know, the fan base is, you know, particularly who have organised that one.
Yeah, I would say my knowledge of comparison isn't great, you know. I don't know if
tell us about your global TIFO knowledge, James.
Exactly, that's it. I know another team is really bad at it. If I can help you out, and I know you're particularly good at it. So it just adds the atmosphere, and it's the time. It's, you know, it's about like the time we put in here. These guys are doing this, you know, for just out the goodness of their hearts, for the love of the club, and wanting to put on a bit of an occasion. So fair play them. I don't know what time they were up getting that all together on Sunday and between Saturday and all that stuff, but great effort.
I think it was going on through the week.
Was it, right?
Aye, I think it was.
Yeah, there was some stuff online. You've seen some of the tours, some people going through Celtic Park for the tours, I think maybe Wednesday, Thursday, and you could already see some of the stuff in place and some of the seating. So yeah, brilliant effort. It doesn't happen by magic. Some people think you just switch on for the game and that's all just happened. So absolute credit where it's due. Onto the game itself. So Ange's named a fairly predictable starting lineup for this one. I think it was the exact same lineup as he went with for Norwich the week prior. The lineup, of course, may change over time as Carl Starfelt, Maurice Jens, Alessandro Bernabei and others get more game time. But James, were you happy enough with the lineup and generally how we started the game?
Yeah, I must say I'm a bad over Maeda guy. I would go for a bad over Maeda. I can understand why Maeda does get picked. He's the one that's got the attitude, puts in the shift, he's got the energy. I thought he had a funny game yesterday, not just because I thought it should have been a bad ahead of him, but that's the only one you could maybe have picked anything out of. We don't know where Jens is at in terms of fitness, and if he got a wee knock, there's no point in risking him in a new system and all that stuff. So totally the right call for Stephen Welsh, and totally justified, obviously, within 2 minutes.
Yeah. Just on Maeda, did you see his header as well as I did? That
no, I've only seen it at the game.
Juranovic has crossed it for right-hand side, and I think he's about 7 yards out, pretty central, and he's headed it back towards Juranovic.
He's the other side of the post, but he's no so far the other side of the post that it's a ridiculous angle to.
It was a hell of a 1-2 to be playing with Juranovic.
It was a 1-2, almost as bad as Anthony Stewart's header over the bar, where he's tried to header it out. Did you see that one? But we got a second corner from it in the first half. Aberdeen centre half went to, well, he's meant to header it out that way. It just flew in the other direction. But it was a bit of a strange one. That I was up the opposite end, so I couldn't quite work out what happened. But clearly, sheriff's badge.
Yeah. It's interesting. You talk about Maeda versus Abada. Maeda, he is 100% in terms of his work rate and effort. The tracking back, it's like he sets the tone. It's like Ange says, do you know what? This is what I need you all to do. Yeah. Albeit he's such a supreme athlete. But sometimes his touch is a bit off. There's no getting away from it. And, you know, maybe that'll come good. I think his touch seems to be a wee bit sharper than it has done at times last season. But there's always going to be comparisons made with him and the other wide guys. It's just that kind of position.
No issue being as a player. He's a player, all right. And he's a guy I love having my team and in my squad. Just if you ask me to just gun to head, would I go Abad or Maeda? At this moment, I would go Abad. I thought he's come into pre-season well.
Fair enough. Miff, James obviously mentioned the early goal from Stephen Welch. I think it was 2:26 on the clock, something like that. Also, just in terms of the general position with Stephen Welch, according to Anthony Joseph of Sky Sports, Toulouse have now dropped their interest in him. He was rumoured to be their top target this season, but it seems that Celtic and Ange have given them zero encouragement with that one. So do you think they're right to have taken that stance? And how do you think Welch done in general?
In terms of the stance of taking, absolutely, because we need him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, £3.5 million for Stephen Welch probably seems like good money, but how much would it cost us to go and replace him to get somebody else in that would be able to fulfil the role that he's fulfilling? I like Welch, you know, probably third or fourth choice centre half is where he would be if everybody was fit and firing. But in terms of yesterday, it was a much improved display, even on the performances that he'd put in pre-season. I thought he was excellent. Getting the goal as early as he did obviously gave him a bit of confidence. I seen during the celebrations when I rewatched the game that he was kind of pointing to Raioli, obviously seemed to be something that he'd worked on. And then I've subsequently seen pictures on Twitter that seemed to be Ange celebrating with Gavin Strachan
set piece
at the goal as well. So, I mean,
did you hear what Raioli said?
You can see big meathead.
No,
Raioli says to him, he was celebrating the goal on Twitter or something. Welsh
Instagram.
Said Instagram, blah, blah, blah. And Raioli says, I couldn't miss your big meathead.
Aye.
Such touching words.
You can see they're close. It's a bit rich to say it's a practice set piece when you've got a centre half standing in the middle of the 6-yard box and, you know, somebody with a left peg just sticking it in there.
But there
was a lot of movement in the kind of periphery, so that may have just taken take the attention away from the defenders. He's just got in between a couple and stuck a beautiful header. Mm-hmm. Really good header.
He's not the tallest Stephen Welch. It's actually been debated what height he actually is. I seen this last week on Twitter. I think somewhere officially it says he's 6'3", but the eye test says, I don't think he's 6'3". But anyway, we'll work that out. I'll try and measure up next time I see him.
That's right.
But I think Miffy's got between two or three defenders. You know, he's managed to pull a few guys to that front post area. Maybe the intention was that he pulls guys and the ball actually goes elsewhere. But whatever they've done, however it's worked, it's resulted in a goal and that's got to be success.
Absolutely. And it's exactly the start that you want. Atmosphere, it just kind of, you know, just ramp things up again, another level in terms of the noise. But it was great to see, obviously, settled the players down because after that, they then really get into a nice pattern of play, albeit that a tad frustrating.
Yeah, I thought for 25 minutes, half an hour, it was excellent. You know, lots of really good stuff. It was just very enjoyable to watch. I wouldn't say many clear-cut chances, but certainly half chances. You know, we were definitely pressing them very, very high and having quite a lot of change out of that. Aberdeen continued to play from the back, certainly during the first half, and fair play to them as such for trying to do the right things, but you don't want to do that against Celtic at Celtic Park, would be my suggestion. And we managed to steal it several times, guys like Maeda leading the charge there, and there was some decent half chances. I thought Kyogo had a couple that he could possibly have done better with. I mean, were you frustrated with the misses, James, or is that just, you know, day one stuff?
I really don't have a lot of criticism on it because they're just coming back, first game, getting right back into live competitive football and the fast flowing system and a faster flowing system that they're implementing again. Did they, you know, execute the system almost perfectly? Aye. You know, I thought the system was working, the finishing was poor, and the finishing will come. You know, on another day, that first half an hour could have been 3-0, nobody could have any complaints. It was just a wee bit ring rusty finishing. So, I know Ange's interview at the end was a bit kind of Alex Ferguson's disgrace kind of stuff, you know, wasn't quite there, but it was like, not really giving anyone any 10 out of 10s here. They'll be hearing about this tomorrow, king of chat. And that's great. That's, you know, the standards of excellence that we want to implement. But in the kind of core light of the game, very enjoyable football to watch and just a couple of finishes. They were over elaborate. They were trying to pass the ball in the goal, create the perfect goal stuff instead of just taking your chances.
Yeah. Miff, Johnny Hayes still doing his thing for Celtic?
Yes, absolutely. He kept the ball in down in the corner. It was going out. And he managed to keep the ball in there and ran into the Aberdeen fans. Yeah. I think it was Raioli or Juranovic got the ball. And then he's got to bury that. Yeah. Absolutely got to bury that. But fair play, Johnny.
What do you think of the fact that I thought Celtic were really quite exposed for that chance? Mm. I think it was 38 minutes into the game. It's been all Celtic, all Celtic, all Celtic. But 1-0 is 1-0, and it's never enough until the whistle goes. And they've had that chance. They've come down the left-hand side, and Hayes has walked onto that. I think Hatate was sleeping. You know, I think it looked like he'd kind of let him drift. And he's got to hit target at the worst, but generally speaking, he should have buried it. And all of a sudden, the mood would have changed. You'd have gone in half-time at one each, and it wouldn't have been justified, but goals change games.
If there's one part of the game I didn't like, there was that, and there was one towards the end of the game as well. And the attacking guys are doing risky things, and risky things means you can lose the ball, and that's part of your game. The guys have got to switch to defence straight away, your midfield and your defenders. Balls ended up from us attacking to them on our 18-yard line within seconds, and we didn't respond to it as quickly, that one and the one towards the end of the game. I don't blame the attackers for that at all, because they've got to take those risks. It's the midfield and the defence have got to be ready for it if that happens.
Yeah, and I think it will get far better. You know, as I say, match day one against Aberdeen, with more practice and more time in the training pitch and just everyone getting up to speed, I'm sure that'll click into gear. Matt, if everyone talks pre-match about the Jotas, Hatatis, Kyogos, but not just saying it because he's your mate, but Greg Taylor was arguably Celtic's best player on the day. What are you saying about that?
I thought so. Again, you mentioned there about the pressing that Maeda does, but several times Taylor was kind of pressing on a third and fourth pass, starting from his left back position right into the midfield. Now that obviously comes with risk when your fullback's going from his actual position right into midfield and trying to close the ball down, but the energy levels that he showed, I do think that there is something in that you say about Maeda. I think it comes for Taylor as well, that both him and Juranovic really do that. They really set the tone in terms of pressing, not just stopping because their man has passed the ball, but they seem to follow the ball and just try to put as much pressure on it as possible. The risk that comes with is he's out of position, but I think that's where the team structure has to kick in and others fall in. Yeah. They tend to do that fairly well. Not only that, Taylor's quality on the ball when he dropped into midfield was excellent. He found the pass out wide more often than not, switched it a few times quickly and accurately as well. So naturally, I know he's a bit of a pet name of mine, but I was delighted for him because I thought it really showed. And then subsequently reading online, it seems like the vast majority Celtic fans feel the same, albeit that you still get your party poopers that want to say, he's not going to be good enough in Europe. But do you know what? He's earned the right to go and play there. So let's see how he does.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone's ever called Greg Taylor's attitude and application into question. He's a grafter, he's a 100%er. But what he definitely has added, I'm just scribbling as you were talking with, quality and composure on the ball. He's genuinely getting the ball and doing some really good things. There was one pass, probably within the first 10 minutes, and it was a bit of a blind pass. He's receiving the ball quite a lot with his back to goal as such, but in a central position, and he received the ball from somebody on our left hand side and kind of blindly reversed it into Maeda's path to put him tearing down the left hand side. It was a really smart, incisive pass, and it's something I don't think he had in his locker before. So it's one thing, you know, always working hard and putting in the shift, but he's clearly listening to the manager and he's clearly been coached into becoming a better player.
Yeah, one of the things that we're, you know, at this time of year, all fans, ourselves included, talk about, is the squad right? Is it ready? Is it finished? And just said this from day one, I'll make everyone who's in the squad this year, last year, better the following year, i.e. this year. You just look at what Ralston turned in last year compared to the year before. Taylor, I think, is starting to surpass, you know, Ralston's jump in quality. I thought he was outstanding yesterday, and I've been a vocal critic, you know, over the last 12 months. Do you remember, John?
I've took some notes.
Yeah. Everyone who is ever at Celtic, I'm never more happy than they become a better player. They play well. They go to the best of their abilities, and he's showing that, you know. Yeah. The attitude's spot on.
I think Bernabei's been on Instagram with his burner account saying he's still murder guys. He's not good enough for Europe, but we'll see. But the other side of that, you know, talking about Bernabei, is that competition makes everybody better in every walk of life, but definitely, you know, when it comes to sport and football specifically here. And I think the fact that Taylor knows there's a guy in for his position, Celtic have spent a couple of quid on him, it's raised his levels. And I think across the board, I talked about this yesterday, I'd done the final whistle show with Brido, and we talked about the fact that whether you're Jota, Kyogo, Taylor, Juranovic, whoever it may be, right back to Joe Hart, everyone has got someone breathing down their neck. And if you have a couple of games where you're off it, or your attitude for any reason isn't what Ange thinks it should be, then you're going to be replaced. And I think that's getting the very best out of some of these players.
Absolutely. That's the importance of competition. That's the importance of adding to your squad. Yesterday's display on the whole was pretty decent. Taylor, for me, epitomises that attitude that you referenced there, James, in that continual, steady improvement that you're looking for in a player that the coach himself would want to see, to say, you know, I've given this player the confidence to play in that position. It's something different for him. Like you say, Tino, receiving the ball with back to goal, playing blind passes, almost being a bit of a creator, drop him into midfield. Greg Taylor, if you've made it as a professional football player, you must have exhibited some sort of skill level that made you stand out for other players you were playing with, regardless of the position that you end up playing at professional. Quite often you'll hear stories of guys that are playing centre-half, right-back, left-back, that were strikers and scored hundreds of goals at youth-level football. So Taylor's always had that ability within him. It's a mixture of the right coaching and being given confidence, and I think it's very clear that what works for this Celtic team is the manager is just so decisive and clear and transparent about how he wants his team to play, what he wants his players to do, that for some players that will just be such a breath of fresh air that they're like, right, I'll go, I'll do my job. They follow that. I'd say Ralston falls into that camp as well.
100%.
They're just given strict instruction as to how they have to play. They go out, they embrace it, and they do the work. What's clear from the two players we've mentioned, Ralston and Taylor, they're willing. They're willing to do the work. Yep. They've got the right stuff, the right attitude, and that's enabled them just to learn effectively what I would say is a new skill or a new position. And now you're seeing the fruits of that labour.
Of course, and they're, you know, obviously very different players from a Jota and a Kyogo and, you know, these kind of more flair players. But I think the likes of, maybe particularly the defensive side of the game, I think Ange says to them, just do what I'm telling you and you will improve. You'll become better and you can become a part of this well-oiled machine. And it's great to see for guys like Taylor and Ralston and just real honest, hard-working professionals and good to see these lads get the rewards. In terms of flair players, so Jota, a stunning strike on the 75th minute to seal all 3 points effectively. That's his fourth game he's scored against Aberdeen, yeah. 4 out of 4. I think it's maybe 5 goals in total. He got a double at Pittodrie. Some guys just seem to play well against certain teams, but he himself said he just sets out to be his best in
Don't
every
care
game.
Who it is.
He's quite a breath of fresh air actually when he speaks. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, he's a bit of a thinker. I think he's just the kind of guy that just wants to improve, wants to give his all for this Celtic side and see where it takes him.
His attitude's fantastic. You know, he must have an idea that he's the star of the show. You know, Kyogo maybe, you know, alongside him. He doesn't show that at all. He's a real team guy. He gets asked questions like that, you know, about, you know, you just after, he's like, just very humble, very straightforward, you know, very considered. And that attitude from him, you know, spreads through his teammates as well. The goal itself was just, so it's kind of fairly in line with us. And they've been trying to get this kind of shoulder on the guy a couple of times, and he seemed to got that half yard. He hadn't even lined up to shoot yet, and I went, that's a goal, because he got the half yard. I went, that's all I needed. The second the guy let him get that half yard, he knew it was too late. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a great strike. No chance for the goalie. Matthew's going to win a lot of games for Celtic, isn't he?
Absolutely. And the stats you mentioned there, I think that goal made it the third winner against Aberdeen. I think he scored the winner up there, scored the winner at Celtic Park as well. So it's not just goals, it's decisive goals, and that's always how you're measured, especially for a winger. You know, output's normally measured in assists, but I think you can see with Jota, it's got to be in goals as well. And he'd put one over the bar before it where he was going nuts with himself, because it was fairly decent chance, 18 yards out, and he just lifted over the bar and he just leaned back, side foot, put it over the bar, and he was really remonstrating with himself. So he didn't half catch that one. It flew like an absolute rocket. And deserved for it, because he worked so hard. You could see he was really, really trying so hard to unlock the defence. And I think you need to give credit to Aberdeen. They defended resolutely, even though they didn't offer much going forward. Like you say, it could have been easily 3-4-0 first 20 minutes. They've hung in there, to the point where it gets to 70 minutes, it's still 1-0.
They brought in 2 strikers.
Stadium gets a bit nervy, so you just never know, and that's why you've got a guy like Jota in your team to do something like that, and then straight away, the whole day changes.
Yeah. Just while I remember, it's come back into my head, Matt. Obviously, I missed the show last week, and you stepped in admirably. Am I right in saying you called 2-0?
I think you did, aye.
Sounds about right.
I think you did.
Mystic myth.
Right.
I think so.
If only I'd bet it.
Indeed. So yeah, so Jota aside, match winner on the day, and we know all about him and what he offers this Celtic side. there were some missed chances across the game. You know, I've mentioned some of Kyogo's stuff in the first half. Jack Amakis has created a good chance for himself but missed it. And David Turnbull, who I'll touch on in just a wee second. Do you have any concerns over the missed chances, Maffer, again, as I put to James? Is it just a wee bit of rustiness at this stage?
I think when it's the first game of the season, you can put it down to rustiness, but you still have concerns over it because you don't want to be one of those teams like Wenger's Arsenal where, you know, maybe going back 5, 6, 7 years ago, that would be great and easy on the eye, but just not take their chances, and it absolutely killed them in games, big games as well. Aurelio's chance first half, the keeper's made a save, but he's kind of hit it.
Kind of at him,
at him in the middle of the goals when he could have picked his spot. Aberdeen defender got a toe on one that was a tap in, I think, again for Aurelio. Jota's cut it back to him and he just get his big toe on it and put it out for a corner. I was up, I thought that one was in. Hatate had one as well, ended up a fairly weak shot to the keeper. And then there was the cutbacks for Kyogo, both of which he was just stretching to get on as well. Those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head, which were all fairly early in the game.
A battered one, he went kind of fairly mid-level, could have gone low and scored, all that stuff.
Those are really safe. And by the way, the penalty we never got?
I've actually seen it now. It's a penalty.
This is the Hatate incident.
Aye.
What was that all about? See, do you know, I see, no, but it, because he's actually, for whatever reason, your man's done a dive forward roll to stop him.
Couldn't work out what he was doing.
If he goes with his foot, that's a penalty. But because he's went with his napper, he's no gave it.
Aye.
If Hatate doesn't come out the road, he gets injured. So,
but he still catches
it's just
him.
A penalty.
He still
it's
catches
just a
him at the end of that.
Oh, yeah.
My father never heard your voice go so high.
Mental. listen, I felt at the game, I'm like, how's that not a penalty? And I'm at the other end. It just looked a stone wall. Watched him and I got him, and then that was me. I was actually quite revved up.
The ref has got a very clear view on it. Nick Walsh, the ref, he was right on it. He was no more than 7-8 yards away, you know, very central to it. But some you get, some you don't. VAR will sort all that out, lads. There'll be no debate
once
that came in. The last point I want to touch on for this game is David Turnbull. So obviously, I suppose we've debated David Turnbull a few times now and caused a bit of controversy online, James, where you were accused of being a clickbait kind of guy.
Twitter's not the real world.
No, it turns out it's
that
not.
Mind.
Aye, there's lots of things I'll tell you. Twitter's not the real world, but so you put a blog article out last week talking about guys that you think may or may not move on for the club, and you suggested, talented as you think he is, that Turnbull might not quite fit into Ange's system and it might be time to cash in because he'll be approaching the last year of his deal. Listen, it's caused debate. It's your genuine opinion. We're not a clickbait kind of site or show. It's just not what we do. But I thought it was interesting when he came on Sunday. I thought he was very good. Very, very good. However, the one thing that he had to do better was that chance that Jota created for him. So I think a few minutes after Jota's goal, he's found himself in space down the left-hand side. Jota has done brilliantly to dig out the pass right across the face of goal. And I think if you're David Turnbull, or indeed anyone that's trying to get a starting place in this Celtic side, you need to contribute, certainly if you're a midfielder or forward, with goals and assists. That's what, you know, makes a manager sit up and take notice. And I think despite all the good stuff he'd done when he came on, it would really have been in his favour if he'd have converted that chance on the day.
Yes, maybe just a wee bit of nerves, feeling that, you know, I've fallen out of first 11, I'm trying to get into first 11, and just too much pressure on yourself.
Maybe he read your article and it's made him nervous.
Well, maybe he just needs to take a move somewhere else, and if he's going to let me distract him, then he's not the footballer I thought he was. He got himself in a great position, and he did, you know, he'd contributed an awful lot from the second he came on yesterday. I don't have any real problem with missing that. He should definitely have scored it. It was quite a simple one. He's maybe just overthought it a wee bit, so no great drama there.
Simple as that. That's how I saw it. Firstly, James's article, people have kind of missed the point, I think. He has said about Turnbull's ability to fit in Ange's team, not Turnbull's ability as a player. So if you can't make, or you can't understand the difference between that, then you're always got to jump to the wrong conclusion. They are two different things. In the context of Turnbull playing yesterday, I thought it was excellent when he came on. I wouldn't be over analysing it. If you use that rule of thumb, Aurelio should have scored.
Jack Amakis
should have scored. Jack Amakis should have scored. Kyogo should have scored. It's in everybody's favour to score goals. So I don't think, even though Turnbull's failed at the starting 11 as such, I don't think that's a case of, you know, it's Hitati's jersey, it's Aurelio's jersey. I think that'll be interchangeable. I think it'll be horses for courses over the season. He just should have hit it first time. It's just a very simple thing where he's tried to be a bit too covered. Bearing in mind, though, that last week he's got his goal by that feint, bringing the ball inside.
It didn't need a touch.
No, it didn't need that, but you know, the thing that worked for him last week hasn't worked for him this week. I just think he's tried to be too clever when he should have put his foot through it.
Yeah, and it's not something to dwell on, but it's just, I get your point about O'Reilly and Kyogo and different guys, but it's when you come off the bench only got 20, 30 minutes or whatever, Jacky Mackers will be feeling the same. He worked very, very hard when he came on. His desire was never in doubt, but he's got to score that chance, because at the moment, Kyogo's the man with the shirt. And I know there'll be loads of rotation. At times, Jacky Mackers will step in, Kyogo steps out, O'Reilly, Hatate and Turnbull will interchange, as you say, Miff. But these guys want to play games of football, and don't let any footballer kid you on that they're happy to sit on the bench. Even the likes of James Forrest, who's maybe at the, you know, top end of his career, he's not happy to sit on the bench. That's just not how these guys operate. And you don't get to a level at Celtic with being happy just to be a bit part player. So whether it's Dave Turnbull, Jacky Mackers, James Forrest when he gets a chance, Abada when he gets a chance, these guys need to be making that positive contribution in terms of these assists and goals. And I think it will all come. You know, Celtic are going to click into gear, and I seen some of the lads in 67 Hill Hill talking this week. I think it was Assam who suggested that Celtic are going to score double figures at some point. I think he's right on the money. I think there's every chance, if Celtic continue to play the way that we know they can play, we're going to see plenty of goals from them.
I thought it could get close to that yesterday if Aberdeen didn't dig in. And that is an impressive performance to not let a second goal in the first 10 minutes, because if we got a second, then there was chances to do so. It could have been anything yesterday, so I think that's some spot on there. It could be double for someone.
Yeah, definitely. So moving on from the Aberdeen game, and before we continue with this week's show, I wanted to provide everyone with a reminder that the Celtic Exchange Plus is available now, giving listeners access to even more shows from us on a weekly basis. This includes pre and post-match shows for every Celtic game, our exclusive Celtic Relived series, special episodes with coaches, journalists and ex-Celtic players, and much, much more. Visit thecelticexchange.supercast.com now for full details and to start your free 14-day trial. And don't worry, the weekly show will still remain free and available here on your podcast player of choice. But to receive access to our exciting range of new shows, visit thecelticexchange.supercast.com now. I also just want to give a wee shout out to a few folk who have really supported us recently and who have already signed up to the Celtic Exchange Plus. So Claire Frew, Cammy Kearney, Elaine Toland and Stephen Maguire, thanks for your ongoing support, and we hope you're really enjoying the new content. A shout out too to Brido, I mentioned him earlier on there, lads. He joined me yesterday for his first show on the Aberdeen Final Whistle. Done a great job, and be sure to check that out once you subscribe.
Great debut.
Yeah, very good debut by Brido, very assured. Moving on, I'd mentioned at the top of the show when I set the agenda that this week Celtic announced that Ian Bankier would be stepping down as director and chairman at the end of this year after more than 10 years in the role. 10 years of that character, James.
Unbelievable, man.
He received glowing references from Dermot Desmond as well as current CEO Michael Nicholson. But if I'm being honest, I don't think Celtic fans are going to lose too much sleep over that one. What has got fans talking though, Miff, is the heavily rumoured suggestion that ex-CEO Peter Lobel, do you want to do your pistol, Pete, thing, will be returning to take over from Bankier at the turn of the year. Miff, your thoughts on that one?
No real thoughts on Bankier leaving, other than probably quite happy that he's no longer associated with the club. On Lawwell, did you ever really think he was away? That's the thing I would say. He was always kind of milling about.
He's second command as CEO and his son's head of scouting.
In the background, you know, it's not a huge shock to me. Am I happy about it? Probably not, because I do think we need at some point, just as a club, to move on from that element of control that he has. Is it then going to make me, you know, kind of rip up my season ticket and no go back? No.
Is that your biggest concern with the element of control? So that there's lots of positives about Peter Law, right? So he certainly knows the game here in Scotland. He's well respected. He knows exactly how Scottish football operates. He did oversee an incredible period of success for the club, you know, since he came in 2003. But many will be concerned that he interferes too much in football than matters. He certainly has done in the past. You know, people can kid on about it, but there's no doubt he's had too much of a say in who's come in and some different managerial stuff at different times. So whether that would be an issue were he to become chairman, I don't know. But it definitely niggles at some supporters, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think also there's the element of contempt that he treats the fans with time to time, maybe not constantly, but it definitely reared its head the COVID season. I think also, I know we're a commercial enterprise, but even the price of food in at Celtic Park, you know, on a match day is absolutely ridiculous. You know, there's things like that where I think as a club, I think the commerce element is driven by him, because he is somebody who has revamped the club and their commercial arm, but, or their focus on their commercial arm, should I say. But with Lawwell, he's done a lot of good for the club, and I think it's easy to forget that. I think the way things ended for him, it was very, very sour. However, his fingerprints were all over what has rectified that, and you do need to bear that in mind.
With Ange
and what's happened subsequently. Would that have happened without his blessing? I don't think so.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I have. That doesn't make what he did wrong right, but I think Lawwell is in the fabric of the current Celtic board and would always be until such times as he completely retires and moves away from it.
Yeah.
And you always had the feeling that he hadn't, that he was always in there in the background, especially when Mackay left so abruptly and so quickly.
Yeah. James, where do you stand on it? Is that an issue for you?
Overall, I think if Celtic as a company, not a club, is there a difference? Is a proper grown-up company with proper lines of, you can't step over here, you're the chairman, you're an ambassadorial role, this is executive, stay on the road, you know, for Michael Nicholson and the likes, and obviously his son's head of coaching, where Lawwell has clearly dipped his toe in before to appalling results. Like it or not, it wasn't Dave King, Steve Gerrard that stopped 10 in a row, it was Peter Lawwell, because the decisions...
As harsh as that?
Well, if you let go Rodgers and you put Lennon in when every single Celtic fan in the world knew that was the wrong move, we got what we knew we were going to get when Lennon came in. I mean, no harm in Lennon there. If Lennon left after that Scottish Cup final, he'd have been lauded a hero, and that'll come back around again, no doubt. But Lawwell was in charge and made those decisions to wrest control from Lawwell, from Brendan Rodgers, and that's why we ended up losing 10 in a row, because the control meant we got Lennon. On the other side, a very well-respected football operator, not just in Scotland, in the UK, in Europe, and Celtic want to have ambitions for that. No, as Miff says, no Scottish football inside out, knows who to talk to, how to talk to them, when to talk to them. Terrible negotiator, so can we get that sorted out and keep him out of that side of things? I suppose it's about what is he going to do as chairman, and if that role is clear and it stays that, fine. If not, big danger.
That is the thing, because the role of chairman, you know, within any sort of commercial enterprise, by and large, it's figurehead type stuff. You know, you're not making day-to-day decisions, and you certainly shouldn't be. But it's just that we know the control that Peter Lawwell historically has had at the club, the influence he's had. He was certainly, and I'm sure still is, close to people like Michael Nicholson. So it's just natural to assume that, yes, even if he's coming in the role as chairman, or only chairman, inverted commas, he'll still be around. You know, he would be involved in some decision making. And my real hope is that he comes in with a suit on and not an Adidas trackie with PL on it and starts to make football decisions as well, because that's where it all comes a cropper.
I'll be coming in with his piping slippers and said, I'm just here to shake hands and cut ribbons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe in with the Gantt apology shirt on. Remember that?
Dust it down.
See, the thing is, to me, it just seems to be needlessly rocking what was a fairly steady boat. Now, is that a good enough reason for somebody who's probably ticking a lot of boxes to be chairman not to do it, because the fans might not like it? Well probably aye, because it's just going to unsettle elements of the fans. When
it doesn't need to if it's done right.
I think we'd just get used to the fact of Nicholson being there.
But it's not, as long as it doesn't encroach that.
That agreed, but does a leopard change its spots?
Well, a big eagle doesn't like being told to stay out of this.
I don't think it will. That's what makes it a dangerous appointment, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah. If you went to the broader recruitment world and said, who's the best guy for chairman? It might well be Law, because his experience is long told. But is there someone out that could, you know, bring a bit of freshness? You know, not that chairman necessarily needs freshness, but, you know, a bit more gravitas, a bit of a different network, you know, that kind of thing.
Bono or Jim Kerr?
Let's get the kettle on.
Yeah, I mean, his CV absolutely stacks up. You can see why he would certainly be considered for such a role, but it's people talking, you know, modern terms about the optics of the whole thing. There's no doubt he's capable of such a role, absolutely, but whether he's the right fit or not in the eyes of the fans, and, you know, just would it be the right feel? As you say, Miff, things are ticking along nicely just now. Things are cooking with gas for the champions again. The feel-good is definitely there. Ange's building something special. Michael Nicholson stocks high as well.
And then in he comes.
Oi, what's happening? What's happening, guys?
You just wonder if it's necessary. Listen, it might not happen. It's been strongly rumoured.
It is 100% going to happen.
You going with it?
Absolutely.
Is that a Celtic Exchange exclusive?
No IDK
don't answer
stuff.
Subscribe.
No IDK
stuff. Then we'll get your answer.
100%.
We'll tell you all about it at the Celtic Exchange Plus. But yeah, there's a high possibility that it will happen, so we'll certainly keep a close eye and to be discussed as and when Celtic make any sort of announcement on it. Going back to Football Matters, you lads will be pleased to hear. Celtic face a trip to the Highlands for match day two in the Scottish Premiership, and we play Ross County this Saturday in a 3 p.m. kickoff. The Staggies lost their opening game 2-1 to Hearts at Tynecastle at the weekend, but Dingwall can be a difficult place to go at times. Miff, I know you kept a close eye in their pre-season and how they were doing, so what are you expecting from this one?
Just a usual sort of tough game you get when you go up there. It's a tight park and unusual, 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday away game, eh?
3 o'clock on a Saturday, what's that all about?
Magic. Yeah. But no, expect a tough game. I was speaking to, for my sins, a couple of Jambos, and they'd said that Ross County made life fairly difficult for them.
They were good.
They played pretty well against Hearts, who have been much touted after the recruitment in the summer. So, no, tough game. But again, it's like any game we play domestically. It depends on us, team that turns up, how we play, and the tempo and the intensity that we play with.
I can't say I know much about how their squad's shaping up for the season. I do know, obviously, they lost Regan Charles-Cook, who, along with Jack Amakis, was top scorer in the league. So that's got to be a loss for them. They've won all four of their opening League Cup group games. So, again, like Aberdeen last time, mixed opposition. So Bucky Thistle, Dunfermline, Alloa and East Fife. Did you catch any of those games, James?
Not any of them, no.
Not any of them, no. So I think Miff's point is the right point. For Celtic, for the most part this season, it's all about what version of Celtic turn up. And as much as we know it's going to be a challenge up there, and you know, we know we had a tough time in December where Tony Ralston scored the 97th minute winner. It can be a tough place to go and play football, but do you agree, James, it's more about what Celtic do on the day?
Yeah, I think what we were talking earlier on about great football from Celtic yesterday, couldn't quite finish things off. This is the, you know, give me another game and we'll start to show we can finish it off. You know, going away up to Dingwall, I'd rather go in August than November, December, whenever Ralston scored his goal. Mm-hmm. We'll get that in January, February, I'm sure. But, you know, if we want to win leagues, you've got to go to Dingwall and take away 3 points. It's as simple as that. I was talking to our friend Koosh today, just in that regard. So they will be well set up. They always are. I think Mackay seems to have used his network to bring in some, you know, decent signings that people hadn't expected would come to Ross County. So there'll be a challenge, no doubt. And it's their first home game. They'll be wanting to put on a show for their fans. They've restricted the away fan allocation and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be a good game. Our game should be too much for them for sure. So it's just a matter of us getting there on the day and doing their job.
Yeah, I think so. Miff, it's another full midweek to prepare. So another week on the training pitch with Ange, no qualifiers to contend with. That's got to be a huge advantage to the players and the coaching staff at this time, hasn't it?
Absolutely, because, you know, you've come off the back of a fairly solid pre-season, a competitive pre-season, I think we would all say it was as well. Certainly the Blackburn game was a meaty game. So having that additional time in the training pitch after the competitive action started, you've got a kind of body evidence to work with there in terms of, you know, how Aberdeen have set up. That's probably going to be how...
And that'll be one of the best 90% setups you'll come up against.
90% of your games are going to go. And then what you can do to counteract that, things you've done well, things you've not done so well. We just seem to have a squad that has the answers for the problems that will be posed to us domestically. I don't think we can doubt that. It'll just be interesting to see off the back of how Aberdeen have played and how certain players have played, what he then subsequently goes with. You know, the players we've already touched upon, Maeda have been one, and Turnbull and maybe Pataki are really been the other.
Yeah, I mean, that was my next question, James. So we may well see some more signings. Ange, he's certainly not ruled out the possibility of any more, you know, incomings and outgoings at the club. But do you anticipate many or any changes to the starting 11 as Ange looks to keep it fresh?
I don't think there's any great need for it. You know, no one's shamed himself on Saturday there. And
nobody suggested they have.
Well, I don't think there's really any need for changes on any grand scale. If the manager's job is to get the players to get the ball in position to score, that then the players got to that. They just didn't, you know, finish their lines kind of thing. You've got maybe, as I said at the top, I'd maybe gone for Abada instead of Maeda anyway. So you can argue the other way as well. I don't think anything else gets changed now.
I meant to pick up on it when you were talking about him, but I thought Abada was quite wasteful at times when he came on.
Yeah, I don't think he was great, and he should have scored as well. But then, so should everyone, it turns out.
You should all have scored. Joe Hart included.
A wee bit wasteful. A couple of balls just didn't quite come his way and stuff like that. A couple of crosses that just wouldn't, there was one that just wouldn't come down from him to get in and stuff. But yeah. I like him as a player, and I think he's the kind of guy we should be having on more often than not.
Interesting now that we're getting to the, you know, the competitive stuff, that you're starting to see the squad obviously we're one game in, but bear out to an extent. So James McCarthy falls out the picture. We know Eddie Gucci's picked up an injury. We spoke last week, or you guys did, about Mikey Johnson potentially getting out on loan. And the 11 plus the subs that, you know, were the subs against Aberdeen, that looks like the strongest squad at this moment in time. And unless we bring in new bodies, that'll generally be what Andrew work with, won't it, Muff?
I would say so. I can't see a way back for the likes of Julian Johnson when they've been spoke about in terms of being out the door. Very difficult then to come back in. Just suggests the manager's lost trust, although I did see that Andrew referenced that there was a player in there with Johnson, which would suggest going away and getting his confidence back is the main driver behind the loan. I think I've mentioned in previous podcasts, it just seems like when he comes on at Celtic Park, it's almost like his confidence drains the minute he steps on the park. So I don't think there's any debate that there's a player in there. It seems to me just lack of confidence leading to poor decision making is what's wrong with Mikey Johnson at the moment. If he goes somewhere where he's loved and gets an arm put around him, I think that player will come back. No doubt about that at all. Regarding McCarthy, I think if he went back to podcasts, going back maybe 6-7 months, I regarded the signing as pretty odd. Didn't see it as a fit. I think that was maybe just a kind of, okay, he's a Celtic fan, let's get him in type signing. I know you guys rate him as a player. I did rate him as a player, but he's just not really had a run of games. And to that point, it's really harsh to judge him, because if you've not had a run of games, say 6-7 games in the side, how can you show your best?
But they go together. To get the run of games, you need to give me a good one.
True.
Yeah,
true.
I mean, there was an article last week, I think it was from Forest Finishing. In fact, it definitely was a really good article, mostly around Mikey Johnson and Stephen Welsh, and generally about our academy players.
On our site,
yeah. And you simply cannot prove yourself by getting 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there, nothing that week, 2 minutes that week. And maybe if loan's the solution, then so be it. But for any player to prove themselves and to find their feet, you must play games of football. It's the name of the game. And maybe it's the right move for Mikey Johnson, and it might be the right move for a couple of others.
I said it should have been the move for McCarthy last year. I said it January when he hadn't played much. The best thing he could have done was went out and played 6 months in loan. I know it seems an odd thing to loan out an established international player, but he needed games. He'd come off a period where he was really injury prone. You need to go out and test that. If he's not going to get it at Celtic, go out and test it and let him play somewhere. And I would say that's still the case now. If Moyes came in and Moyes coming off the bench, and we're looking to bring other players in for that position, let McCarthy go and play somewhere. Just let him play so that we can see what we've got.
And Moyes also showed he can be versatile in midfield. He's like, just stick me in anywhere and I'll do a job, you know?
I think Moyes' cameo yesterday was interesting. So he only came in about the 82nd minute. And like with the game against Norwich the previous week, despite his short time in the park, he's involved a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's coincidence. I think that's a guy who knows how to position himself and he knows how to read the game. And he seemed to be the available man.
Get it through me.
Every time the other guys around him got the ball. And I thought that was interesting. He showed a lot of composure in the ball and even looked that wee bit sharper than he did against Norwich, thanks to the week or so's training. So we'll keep a very close eye on Moy and whether he slots in as a number 6 or a number 8. That will remain to be seen. But I think it's an interesting signing. But unfortunately, for James McCarthy, it may... have put the writing on the wall for him, so we'll need to see if he makes a move out before the end of the transfer window. Going back to that Ross County game, so obviously we've kind of touched on it in a wee bit of detail, but I'll just put you on the spot for your predictions. Miff, you're on exceptional form, obviously, with your 2-0 Aberdeen call, so I'll let you go first.
3-1 Celtic.
2-0.
2-0.
Clean sheet.
Aye, what's your thinking there, Miff, with the concession of a goal? Celtic don't concede goals.
Hart's not into that.
Hart playing up. Short pass, 80 yards out for his own goal and gets lobbed
by.
Somebody had a go at it yesterday actually, and it was a wee bit of a kind of shot to nothing, but somebody did have the first go at lifting him.
It's
going to happen.
Yeah, I'd fancy Celtic up there and win. I don't think it would be easy by any stretch, but I think Celtic by a couple of goals, so whether that's 2-0 as suggested, James, or 3-1, I think Celtic will go and do the business. Moving back off the field, we'll just flip-flop between the two again for this week's show. On Friday of last week, Celtic completed the replacement of the old stadium banners with a fresh new look for the new season. And it's fair to say again, this is one that's caused a bit of noise and a bit of controversy online. So the new design sees the iconic image of Billy McNeil holding the European Cup aloft at the Lisbon Lions side of the stadium. Then at the opposite end of the Jock Stein stand, we've got current captain Callum McGregor with the Scottish Premiership trophy. Matt, you were there on Sunday, of course, to see the banners up close and personal. Any thoughts on them?
I thought they looked quite nice, to be honest. I thought they looked quite nice. I didn't think there was any massive... So there's been a bar near about that, has there, online?
Twitter is not the real world.
This is true. Twitter is not real, but...
I thought it looked nice. It's aesthetically pleasing. it's an upgrade in what we had before in terms of it's just been refreshed, because there's nothing worse than things looking kind of old and jaded and seagulls doing their business all over it and things like that as well. So you need, you know what I mean? You need.
What do you think of the fact that it's a very kind of clean and fresh design as opposed to the quite busy design last time out, albeit very popular with all the various players around? Do you have any take on that, or are you skipping past this one?
No, again, just like going to the games and watching the team, and the club have clearly made an effort. I mean, if you look back to when I first started going to games on my own, early 90s, unfortunately, the fan experience and
the match day experience,
trying to dodge gangs of people in the industrial estate of Dunmarnock just to get up to the game to make it safe, to what it is now when I take my boys there and you go the Celtic way, and it's, you know, I think what they've done in the outside of the stadium just adds to that. I don't see it. I know it's great seeing the legends and all that, but if you think how weather beaten all that material is for sitting there over the course of many years, it just makes sense that they refresh it. I'm a bit lost on why this would cause ire.
Yeah, I think the original ones or the previous version were up in 2015, so they were certainly due for a refreshing or a refreshed look. A lot of talk, James, online. I'm sure you've seen it. You know, the last banners were good, and they made for some good talking points, and it was great to see the legends. I just think the current version, like Miff, I don't think it's worth kind of fawning out with anybody over. And I've seen some people getting really quite excited online, which is a bit mad. But I do quite like the classy and simple look of them.
It shows you how far we've come. You know, to speak of your match day experience, which was just, you know, getting off the bus, getting a drink or something, getting to the game, all that stuff. And the concourse at Celtic, the whole kind of that triangle, it's outstanding for everyone. You know, that approach to the game compared to what it used to be. The banners themselves compared to last ones, I think they look outstanding. It's a great, you know, clean, modern, fresh look. It looks like modern material that it'll take the weather that the other ones didn't. So whoever at Celtic came up with it, you know, hats off to you. I thought it was a great job.
I think it was maybe Lawwell.
I would like to retract that.
Yeah, our incoming chairman had a,
so no, you do
had a big hand in this. But yeah, I suppose you're right, James. You know, it shows how far we've come. Interestingly, date for date, we played Aberdeen there on the 31st of July, and it was a year to the day. It was 31st of July last year where we get beat by Hearts 2-1 in that opening game. A lot has changed to Celtic since then, you know, certainly on the park and the mood and feel off the park. But if the biggest thing we've got to gripe about is some banners that aren't quite to your taste aesthetically, then I think we're in a decent place.
There was a famous writer in Not the View over the years called Malcontent. That was his kind of nom de plume, if you like. And this is all it is. Just
nom de plume, look
just
at us.
Malcontented, you know, I need something to whinge about and I can jump on Twitter and whinge about it. So, not for me. Get on, mate, enjoy the football.
I hear you.
Write that down, nom de plume.
Nom de plume, if you and I can Google that later on and see what's going on with that.
I'll use that.
But yeah, the banners are there for all to see, and they'll be there for the next few years, and I think they're looking pretty good. On a similar note, not wanting to dwell on Muff, but the club announced the third kit. They launched that this morning. Quite a classy looking design, I would say. But again, I don't think guys of our age are the target market for that. But
this guy is.
Muff, you've got a couple of young lads that like the latest kit, so what's your thoughts on that?
I thought it looked pretty classy. Just interestingly, Electric Six have a song called Nom de Plume.
Big fan of that.
Aye. I like it. Again, it's nice. What I'll say is...
Your Celtic design team's
based on the lemony colours, would have been even more marketable should Eddie have been here. Lemon.
Oh, yeah.
Want to be Edward. Maybe I'm a wee step ahead of the game.
There was a guy on Twitter today who said, just set me up a standing order for these chips.
Just keep it coming. I thought it looked lovely. Yeah, we've been fairly well served with strips.
I have to say, you're quite lofty in your praise there today, Miff. Just in terms of the stadium banners, quote unquote, quite nice. And the third kit, nice. So you've really gone all out in your praise of the
I have a wide vocabulary and oratory, so I just wanted to express it.
All good stuff. James, the first official week of the season is now over. What's your thoughts on how things are shaping up at the moment?
Kind of as we thought it would. We've watched the pre-season closely, and we've seen improvements, we've seen squad additions, you know, we've seen sharpness in the play, and we saw all that on display on Sunday. The squad additions, as much as we didn't change a first 11 there, they've really put the, you know, positive pressure on guys in those positions. And the big thing I've talked about it before is the gaps between the guy who's, you know, lucky enough to get the first 11 shirt just now and the guy right behind him. It's not as big as it used to be. just by any comparison, this squad to last year, no harm to the guys that were in there last year, it's a world of change that Andy's put into place, and I think we're set up really nice.
I think you're right, and I think even looking back to that Hearts game that I mentioned, opening game of last season, Scott Bain was your goalkeeper, Sorrow was one of your centre midfielders, and we're night and day, we're streets away from where that is. Matthew, you were in the host chair last week, you're back in your own seat this week. What one do you prefer to talk about Celtic from?
Definitely here, Tino, absolutely no doubt about that. Would be in absolutely no rush to do that again.
And in terms of the football stuff, how are you finding it all?
Happy. I think we're in a good place. You can see that the squad's unified, the club's unified well, has been up to this point. We can
go on about space.
Chairman appointments and things like that. But no, definitely you can see just we're building something, and don't be surprised if there's maybe a big signing just round the corner. It seems to me Ange is agitating for that.
In what position?
Midfield.
Turnbull out?
Oh, that's enough for that, James. You had your Turnbull win last week.
No chance.
So after match day one, Celtic find themselves exactly where they were after match day 38 of last season, at the very top of the Scottish Premiership table. It's going to be a long season ahead for Ange and the boys, but we're off to a winning start, and you can't ask for much more than that. Thanks to Miff and James for joining me in today's show, and thanks to you as always for tuning in. Don't forget to visit the CelticExchange.supercast.com to get started with the Celtic Exchange Plus and to access all of our new shows. But in the meantime, from all of us here, we'll see you again very soon.
Podcast Network.